This is the Lombardi Line with Michael Lombardi and Patrick Maher on VSiN.
Thank you, Brent. The conclusion of Week 7 NFL tonight. New England. Michael Lombardi may have heard of it. Gillette Stadium there tonight. The Bears are in town, so it should be exciting. I'm seeing a couple of 8.5s pop up, mostly 8s, as the New England Patriots getting hot, laying it at home. We say hi and welcome you in. It's Monday. I'm Patrick Maher. Of course, he's Michael Lombardi. And a spirited conversation off the air talking about the NFL, the product that delivers week after week, my man.
I love it. I mean, if it was so good and nobody made thinking that we'd have nothing to talk about. However, they give us plenty to talk about. And like I said on the podcast, I wish we would be, I know ESPN, I know NBC, I know CBS, I know Fox. They're all partners with the NFL, so nobody wants to say things that are kind of not. But we're really missing. There's so much football out there that's not being talked about, that's left on the curb and not being challenged, that, it's cheating the fans more than anybody.
Okay, that's a good tease. I'll tease you back. A theme today will be the fall from grace for Rodgers and Brady. We'll get to what's happening with those two. How about this? There's 16 teams in the NFC. 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, including 3 in the NFC East, are above 500. Which is wild. We'll get to the stats. We'll get to the trends from yesterday, of course. Michael Lombardi, 2-1 on his plays because he is now a New York Jet fan, apparently. However,
I was 3-0. I was 3-0 on my. I had the Jets. I had the Brownies. I checked with Bill AD, and I had the Steelers.
Oh, okay, good. Because I thought you threw the Tampa Bay Bucks in there. Okay, you had the Steelers.
No, I did on Russo. I took him on Russo. That I was 1-2 on Russo. He was 1-2 on me, and I'm sure I'm going to listen to how, Mike LaFleur got him Mike McDaniels got him by not kicking that kick, and I'm sure he probably thinks he should have that, but he's not going to have that.
Tremendous job, my man. A 3-0 sweep of the board for Michael Lombardi on the Lombardi Line. A little birdie got in my ear early today and said he's fired up about the Dolphins. So let's talk about that exciting team and the genius that is Mike McDaniels. A 16-10 win, a cover for you and your Steelers. The Dolphins snap a 3-game losing streak. They scored a quick 13 points. Then, a whole lot of nothing.
Well, they got lucky to score 16. I mean, here's what bothers me. Here's what really bothers me is everybody says Mike McDaniels is a genius, and I'm sure at Yale he is. And I'm sure that if I were in class, I would want to sit next to him to cheat off his test. However, I can't think of anything genius-like that he's done. I mean, let's face it. That game was the first drive of the game. The second two drives, he had 10 first downs in the first three drives, right? After that, they didn't do anything. They got 7 first downs the rest of the game. And the decision to not go up by 9, I think it gives analytics a bad name. I really do. It's unfair to the analytical community to be saying that was an analytical decision. No, that was a dumb decision. And here's why it's a dumb decision. If you're watching the same game that I'm watching, and if you're watching the team that I'm watching, that you're coaching, you realize that if you got to 19 points, that would have been the third most points you scored all season with Tua. If you were watching the game that I was watching, you would have realized that your quarterback was trying to throw 4, perhaps 5 interceptions. Specifically the one at the end of the first half that Sutton just dropped. You don't get those 3 points if he catches that one. You don't get those 3. Now, they dropped them. Credit to Tua. They don't count on a stat sheet. But if you're watching Tua play and you're watching that game and you choose to neglect the 3 points, that's not analytics. That's stupidity.
Yeah, Tua was begging the Steelers to take the ball away, but they wouldn't. The opposite is true for the Dolphins and Kenny Pickett. The defense, the defense for the Dolphins was giving up those yardage 20-20, and then once they got into the red zone there, Pickett threw 3 picks inside his own, inside the 25, 2 interceptions in the closing minutes. That was kind of the difference. Pickett is a guy we're going to have to give him a full rookie year, and then we'll see what happens next year with him.
I mean, he tries to force the in cut. If he takes the check down to Harris, right, and Harris could maybe run, and it's probably going to be a fourth down call for Tomlin. Tomlin might kick the field goal there. I don't know. But he tries to fit the dig cut in, and they're reading it the whole way. And then he's on the move, and he makes a disastrous throw where the kid from Auburn picks it off. Noah, I can't say his last name. But to me, you know, when the heat of the moment went, he didn't really respond to the call. And look, like I've said about Mac Jones, who apparently, according to our board today, is listed as the starter on the board. What I said about Mac, I say the same thing about Pickett. Their skill set isn't unique. They don't have a great arm.
That's correct.
They don't have a great athletic skills. They're not, you know, this unbelievable runner. They're smart. They understand how to play the position. And when they don't make good decisions, they lose their advantage. They lose the advantage of what makes them good is the intellectual property that they bring to the table. And when Pickett does what he did there, we can say it's a lack of experience. Understand it probably is. But that's what hurts the most.
I hope there's a whole lot of moxie there, because if I'm a Steelers fan and I've got this for 10 more years, I just don't see special. That Whipple offense at Pitt, they spread it out. He could do a lot with lesser defenders. We shall see. I don't want to judge the kid too quickly. It's weird with the gloves and the conversation about the hand size continuously. He drops the ball a lot when he's running it. Anywho, we digress. Let's close the Dolphins out. 16-10. Another under. The unders continue to go crazy. The unders were 7-5 yesterday. So moving forward with the Dolphins, I'll set you up for next week. But again, the takeaway is nothing special here. That should have been a beatdown of the Steelers and ended up being a 16-10 win. Pardon me.
Well, I mean, look, the Steelers have gotten better on defense. They really have. They've improved their defense, and you know, it didn't look like it early. But what concerning if you're a Dolphin fan is the Steelers made adjustments in the second quarter, and Miami didn't have an adjustment to make after that. They didn't have it. And, you know, your quarterback is limited in terms of he's not going to run. Now he tried to run. But to me, when Miami, other than we said this on our show, we've talked about this, other than the fourth quarter where they scored 28 points and 21, whatever it was, right? This team doesn't score points. They score 20 against New England, 10 of which came from their defense. They scored 21 against Buffalo. The ball was spotted at the 6. And in the last 4 weeks, they've scored 15, 17, 16, and 16. So when you thumb your nose, at 3, do you really understand who you are as a team? I mean, yesterday with Tua back, and certainly there was fanfare, and certainly we were all happy he was back, right? They had 17 first downs. 17, which is usually what they get in a game. They had 18 against New England. They had 19 against the Jets. They had 20 against Cincinnati. They had 15 against Buffalo. Can we stop with this as an explosive offense, please?
He's got too many weapons, the mastermind there. McDaniels has too many weapons for this team to score as anemically as you just pointed out, frankly. And
they
I
average
understand
6 yards per play.
Getting, yeah, it's just not enough.
I mean, all right, points per drive, 1.3, okay? Points per drive, they average 1.33, right? And, you know, I went through it this morning. They 0.25 in points per possession. I mean, Patrick, they don't score. They can't get the ball in the end zone. They make bad decisions. Points per play, they were 0.25. Like those areas I just gave you, red zone, third down. What were they, 4 for 14 on third down? That none of them were good. They're fortunate they were playing a quarterback who turned the ball over 3 times, and Pittsburgh couldn't catch a pass. I mean, Pittsburgh DBs are killing themselves today, especially Sutton. If he catches that ball at the end of the half, it's a 13-10 at halftime.
That's right.
You know, what are we doing there? After he doesn't kick that field goal, he gets 2 more first downs, all on 1st and 10 play-action passes. No other play after that.
The Miami Dolphins, Michael Lombardi, head to Detroit next Sunday early window. You want to take a stab? What are the Miami Dolphins going to lay? I gave it away. Of course, they're laying a little bit here. What are they laying against Detroit?
I mean, I'm going to say they're probably 5. I mean, can we talk about your Detroit line? I mean, you scolded me for recommending them.
You want to do that now? I mean, you want to depress the audience this early in the show? 5 turnovers? Goff is literally the worst quarterback I've ever watched in my life, and I've watched some bad ones.
No, he's not. He's not the worst, but he's in their conversation. I mean, can you imagine he's the first pick in the draft?
He's so bad. I know I'm being.
Can you imagine the worldwide leader? I on Twitter, I would get more crap from people on because the worldwide leader had a couple people that thought he was sensational, and they were giving me so much crap that I thought he was just an average player, below average. The offense was making him better. How about they had? How about their fourth quarter? Can I give you their fourth quarter numbers? I'm sure you watched.
I know it like the back of my hand. Please, I'd love to hear about it. And tell me more about Dan Campbell when you do it, please.
Well, they had 11 drives in the game. They had 5 turnovers, and they had 8 plays, and they had 8 drives of 1 first down or less. In the fourth quarter, Patrick, they lost the game. They had 23 plays, 3 fumbles, and an interception. Is that good? I'm asking. I don't know. I'm asking. Is that good?
It doesn't sound good.
I mean, Dan Campbell's 1-5, and like, who's going to help Dan Campbell out? I mean, that was a winnable game. That actually, to be honest with you, if you had Detroit in the 7, that's 10-6.
It's a terrible
loss. You're covering that game.
Oh, no. It was a terrible loss. And again, I'm being a little hyperbolic with Jared Goff. Of course, I've watched worse quarterbacks, but underthrowing receivers on big chances, always safe. Just completely scattered in the pocket. He's terrible. And this Lions team, who's going to save Dan Campbell? HBO. Because the propaganda machine's out of control, dude. The guy gets up at the podium after every game and said, man, that one's on me. Eventually, it can't be on you. You got to start winning football games. This is parody.
Did he say that?
League
Did he say that?
Every
Did he say that this
week? Game presser. Man, this one's on me. With tears in his eyes. Enough. Enough, Michael Lombardi. When we come back, Tom Brady's in a spot he hasn't been in 20 years. It's Lombardi Line.
You're listening to The Lombardi Line on VSiN, featuring former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now, once again, here's Patrick Maher.
All right, I'm laughing because there's a new symposium, which we'll get to in a second, but BetMGM, the king of sportsbooks, of course, the sponsor of the Lombardi Line. Visit BetMGM.com or download the app. And if you're in Nevada, bring your state issued ID to any MGM property. You're going to be ready to go within minutes. It's the best. It's the king of sports books. Visit BetMGM.com. You got to be 21 years or older. It's 1-800-GAMBLER if you have an issue. Of course, we conclude Monday night in New England tonight with the Bears in town as we welcome you back. But good news during the break. I learned from Michael Lombardi that there's going to be a LaFleur symposium. It's going to be hosted by Matt and Mike. And then we're going to figure out how to convert on third downs. Before you jump in, let me just couple things here. The Packers loss to the Commanders, which is hilarious to say out loud. That's three in a row for Rodgers. I don't think he's been 3-4 in his career. They abandoned the run, 12 attempts. They were 0 for on third down. Rodgers was screaming, what the F are we doing? The offensive line is broke, both pass and run defense. They got a pick six in the next two drives. The Packers had negative yards. It was about as bad as it gets. And your buddy, Mr. Matt LaFleur, seems confused on offense.
Well, I mean, this is the Matt LaFleur we saw at Tennessee before he became the head coach of the Green Bay Packers. This offense is reminiscent. I'm going to do some research on that this afternoon on the Matt LaFleur Tennessee offense that when Arthur Smith took it over became very good, right? And when he ran it, it was horrible. Sir Don Martindale held him to no third downs. The reason I talk about this third down is the LaFleur brothers over the last 2 weeks between the Jets and the Packers are 8-47 on third down. 8-47 on third down. Think about that. I can say this. I'm not a math major, but that ain't good. And look, I mean, Big Daddy's upset, and he has every right to be. He wants somebody's head on a platter. He has every right. He doesn't know where to go to blame. He, you know, Dry Alexander is supposed to be the greatest corner in America. He gets toasted by McLaurin yesterday. They lose a game. They get 2 pick six, really. The 1 pick six got called back on a very, you know, whatever you want to do with that call. But they can't move the ball. I mean, they can't get any rhythm going offensively. And I've said this before, and I'll keep saying it. This is a design problem, right? You can blame the players all you want. LaFleur has known who's on his team since April. Since the 1st of May, he's known who's on his team. For him to run this offense, the same offense as if he had Devontae Adams, for him not to try to get his two best players involved in the game, which are A.J. Dillon and Aaron Jones, is criminal. He's won two games. Against New England, he ran for 199. Against the Bears, he ran for 203. Like, at some point, when does he say, this is what I have, this is how I have to win the game? But he has the greatest quarterback in the league, and this guy's coming off an MVP season, and now you're telling me he's this bad? You're telling me he's this bad?
Completely abandoned the run. You just mentioned just 12 attempts. Over the past 3 weeks, the Packers' offense somehow has gotten progressively worse, and there doesn't seem to be any answers coming. What you just said is fascinating because essentially what you're saying is Matt LaFleur has a system. If he can't fit those pieces into the system, he can't adjust, and that's damning moving forward.
Right. Well, I mean, there's a listener on GM Shuffle that tweeted this to Femi and I yesterday, Patrick. But basically, if you look at his halftime adjustments, the Packers' second half scoring going back to the 49er game. Okay, going back to that, they've scored 49 points since then. They scored 3 against San Francisco, 7 against Minnesota, 3 against Chicago, none against Tampa. They scored 20 against New England. They scored 2 against the Giants. 7 against the Jets and 7 against Washington. That's been their offensive production since the San Francisco game and into this year. And so what does that tell us? It tells us we're not having any adjustment. And so what I say, there's two things that you always look for with teams. You know, we always talk about players, coaches, and scheme. But beyond that, you have to look at, is it a production problem or is it a design problem? Production meaning, are there plays on the tape that we're just not executing? Or is the design not giving us plays? And when you watch the Packers, they don't have a design. He's trying to run Davante Adams' offense, and Devontae's in Las Vegas, right? Nobody's rolling the coverage to these receivers. Nobody's scared of your passing game. They can play man-to-man across the board. Nobody's worried about blitzing Rodgers because you're fearful that Davante Adams is going to give up a bit. You're going to give up a bit. So what do you have to do? You got to change it. So maybe you go to 3 tight ends. Well, Rodgers doesn't want to be under center. He wants to be in shotgun. Whatever he wants to be in, we'll figure out how to work it. That's the job of a coach. I mean, the fact that he's won all these games, and every year I got to listen, well, LaFleur's won 13 games. You're too hard on him. I mean, I watched him in Tennessee. That's why I'm hard on him.
Speaking of Las Vegas, you just mentioned Davante Adams. What happened with Vegas yesterday is once they got the lead, they started pounding the ball. What happened with the Dallas Cowboys, they started pounding the ball. What the hell's going on with LaFleur? You're up 14-3 over the Commanders. Run the football. Your two best players on offense outside of Rodgers are your running backs. Why aren't you running the football? You had 12 attempts in the game. That's malpractice.
Well, if I were in Green Bay, I would say, hey, Matt, I'm just going to give you a little clue. I watch the NFL I watch every game in the NFL every week. And every team that is in a two-back set that runs the ball runs it effectively. Why? Because most of the defenses don't know how to defend two-back runs anymore. There was a time in the NFL where that's all you practiced, two-back runs. But now, because of all the shotgun, because of all the set, nobody's practicing two-back runs. Nobody's practicing point-of-attack runs, cut-the-defense runs. Nobody's practicing point-of-entry runs. So when you run the ball out of two-back like they do in Las Vegas, you're going to have some big holes. I mean, look at some of the holes Jacobs had to run through. So what do we need to do? We need to get Aaron Jones in a two-back set, or we need to get something going here. And to me, that's called coaching. Figure out what you have and then adapt to it. Don't just think because I have Rodgers, I can fill, you know, Davante Adams leaves, I put another. No, they're not X's or Z's. They're players.
Aaron Rodgers has never been a doubles dog in his career. Stephen Bonds, it's Buffalo Bills, will host the Green Bay Packers next Sunday night. On paper, the matchup looks good. And right now, I've got Circa at 11.5. I've got DraftKings 10.5. So it's going to close doubles with the Packers. And Aaron Rodgers says this might be what's good for us.
I'm not worried about this squad. In fact, this might be the best thing for us this week. You know, nobody's going to give us a chance. Going to Buffalo and Sunday Night Football, the chance to get exposed, shoot, might be the best thing for us.
Seems fun. You know what I love?
Who's going to get exposed? Who's going to get exposed? I mean, well, not my Mike's in the Jets. He's riding high. I mean, they have 4-game winning streak, you know, with doing zero on offense, but give Salai credit. I mean, they've basically told Zach Wilson, You're really not participating. We're just going to hand this ball off.
We don't want you involved in this team. The quarterback.
You're not going to be involved. And I give him complete props for doing it. I give him it's the only chance he has to win the game. At least give him credit for that. But look, what's LaFleur going to change against Buffalo? I mean, you know, the problem is, can Green Bay stop Buffalo's offense? I think there's three teams in the league, Patrick. I think it's Buffalo, Kansas City, and the Eagles. Based on what San Francisco did yesterday, you can't say they're an elite team.
No, the Buffalo Bills have the best defense in football. I know we react week to week. San Francisco, by the way, San Francisco got manhandled by the Chiefs. Like, Shanahan should be embarrassed. His team got pummeled by the Chiefs. And you know what? The 49ers gave up 9 picks for Lance and McCaffrey in total. So the reinforcements aren't coming. They got manhandled by the Chiefs. Good on the Chiefs, because they beat them up physically as well.
I'm a D'Amico Ryans fan, but I think he doesn't understand how you got to play the Chiefs. Like, for the Raiders to play the Chiefs better defensively than you do with your talent level, what that tells you is that's a design problem, right? That's a design problem. You didn't design this to specifically take away what they do. And so as an executive, that's what you have to look at on Monday morning. This is not, I mean, I don't want to sound like Big Daddy and blame somebody. He wants somebody fired in Green Bay immediately. But the reality of it is you have to figure out what gives your team the best chance to win the game on that given Sunday based on the personnel that you have. That the Giants are living proof that with good coaching and smart decisions, that you can stay in these games. The Jets are proof of that. Nobody can look any worse than Tennessee. I mean, would you agree with that?
No, you said Tennessee?
Tennessee, I mean, they look so bad offensively. They can't throw it. They can't run.
They're tripping all over themselves. Yep.
They win games.
Because the coach.
The coach.
Quickly on Kansas City, San Francisco was a sharp play. Need I remind you, ended up closing pick'em, maybe Kansas City lane one, San Francisco lane one, and Kansas City, the beatdown 44-23. On offense, the Kansas City Chiefs were fooling. They were having fun. Like, San Francisco would score, and then two plays later, Kansas City's in the end zone. They were out there having fun.
9.1 yards per play. 4.49 points per possession. 4.49 points per possession. 0.75 points per play. That's rare.
Coming to a high school gym near you, the Matt and Mike show, the LaFleur Symposium, third down
execution.
No, we're
going to do it in a big ballroom. We want to do it in a big ballroom. We'll have sandwiches. We'll have popcorn. Yeah, we'll do it in a big ballroom. Hell yeah.
I like popcorn. I like hot dogs. Also, do the Giants like Daniel Jones? That's the question. We're coming back.
You're listening to The Lombardi Line on VSiN, featuring former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now, once again, here's Patrick Maher.
Okay, I sound like a broken record every Monday as the dust settles on another football Sunday, but our team here at VSiN, we're making cash, and VSiN pros are making cash, and you can become one. It's VSiN.com/subscribe. It's $99 through the Super Bowl. What do you get? You get pro tips. You get pro picks, so we'll do the work for you. You get pro tools, the betting splits, which are so important. You get Michael Lombardi's exclusive articles, and you get every guide that we offer. Point Spread Weekly as well every Wednesday. I mean, it's just a no-brainer. It's VSiN.com/subscribe. That's VSiN.com/subscribe. Okay, we got you back here. Lombardi Line, of course, on a Monday. We've got, you know, there are some questions, Michael, as we bring in our buddy Thomas Gable, who runs the Race and Sportsbook there at the Borgata. It looks like it's going to be Mac Jones, and I'll set Thomas up this way. Are you preparing as a book for Mac Jones tonight to start for the New England Patriots, Thomas?
Well, that's reading the tea leaves. That's the way it looks now, that it's going to be Mac Jones. We haven't seen anything definite, but that seems to be the case right now. They're leaning that way. So we're certainly thinking that. But I mean, again, with the way that Zappi has played and what we've seen from Mac, you know, earlier this season, is there really much of a difference at this point? I'm not sure. I mean, Zappi has done everything and more that Belichick could have hoped to get from him. So, you know, at this point, I don't think there's too much of a difference in the line, really, between those two.
You know, I agree. I think, to me, like Dallas, you know, they learned there's a certain way to play the game when Dak went out. And I think if you look at New England, this has always been the way they want to play the game. Avoid losing before we win. Don't turn the ball over. And what Mac had done prior to this point, no matter how many yards he gets or what he ends up producing, you know, he was throwing for a ton of yards, but he was turning the ball over too much. You know, three turnovers against Miami, turned the ball over against Pittsburgh, four turnovers against Baltimore. You know, and so even though in the last 3 weeks they've turned the ball over once each game, their defense has kind of covered up a little bit, but they've cut down on those turnovers. And, you know, that's something that Belichick is going to preach. And so whoever goes back in there has got to protect the ball. The Patriots are still 28th in the National Football League in turning the ball over with their offense.
Are you 8 tonight? And where are you sitting on the total there at the Borgata, Thomas?
So right now, this morning, I dangled 9 out there. And again, we talked about this a little bit yesterday on yesterday's show. I mean, Patriots are such a popular teaser play this week, you know, when they're at 8 and practically in every teaser. Now, how many of those survived from yesterday is debatable, but yeah, I mean, it was mostly all Patriots money. So threw 9 out there, see what we can get on the Bears.
Well, I mean, besides the celebration when Bryce Harper hit the home run in the book, I mean, what was the other biggest surprise for you in terms of the outcome based on the handle yesterday?
Well, that Phillies game certainly didn't do us any favors. I just got down from climbing my light pole on Broad Street to come and
yeah, answer. I'm sure you did.
But no, it was, I mean, congratulations to the Phillies, though, and to the Astros. It should be an interesting World Series, to say the least. And, I mean, as you know, Michael, everybody's overjoyed in this area about the Phillies. I mean, I was leaving here last night, and, you know, people are walking around with their Phillies jerseys on and high-fiving each other throughout the casino. So it was certainly a raucous atmosphere in here yesterday. But in terms of the NFL yesterday, looking at the early slate, yes, we had the two big, the one big favorite in Tampa, who went off as a 13.5-point favorite, losing outright, obviously. The Packers also lose to the Commanders. And once again, you know, this has been a common theme week after week. We've seen some bigger Commanders wagers come in day of, and we had that again yesterday. So we ended up losing on the side in that game, but when you factor in the money line parlays and everything else that the Packers were included in, didn't turn out too bad for that. The Browns and Ravens game was a decent result for us as well. Now, the Browns obviously got the money if you bet the Browns. Michael, let me just stop and pause right there for a second, but if you bet the Browns on the money line in that game, I mean, at what point Stefanski was having such success with Chubb running the ball, and then he goes away from it key times, and, you know, they end up losing. They could have very easily have pulled out that victory at Baltimore, don't you think?
I mean, look, Mar Jackson, I think he had, 13 passes in the game? I mean, you know, they played their best defense of the year that game and still lost. I agree. Yeah. Like, it's almost like they get bored with the run, and so they do yourself a favor and they participate with Brissett in there. I mean, if I were to tell you before the game, Patrick, that Brissett was going to have 27 attempts and Lamar Jackson was only going to have 16, but he was only going to complete 9 passes, you're going to say basically, well, but, you know, the Ravens have 44 rushing attempts compared to 24. Chubb averaged 5.7 a carry, and he only had 16 carries. It's perplexing to me, and what even makes it more perplexing is the fact that they still controlled. They had the ball. They only had the ball 25 minutes. Cleveland. They let Baltimore control the ball, and that kills them.
What do you care? You covered your 6.5, your 6 with the Browns. That was one of your big plays. You didn't.
But I thought that was
a Lombardi.
When I was going through it, I said I could easily see the Browns winning this game. I could see Carolina covering. I didn't think they could win. I, you know, when you kind of do that, I actually thought I could see Detroit winning and cover. You know, I thought Detroit, and I thought other than the fourth quarter when the substitute teacher should have come in, Detroit should have covered that. Don't you agree, TG?
Yeah, I mean, that certainly was looking to be the case. And then suddenly I looked up and the Cowboys were running away with it. But, yeah, I mean, that was 10-6 late in that game. And people were back in the lines a little bit here. The other game that was an interesting one for us, I know we kind of focused on it yesterday and previewing it, was the Giants and the Jaguars. You know, that was right. The Jaguars were a sharp play. And the Giants, again, we had all the Giants money come in from the public. And so not too much of a decision really on that. It was actually we ended up making a little bit on the game. But another victory for the Giants. And here they are at 6-1. And you're left scratching your head again with, you know, how good or how bad is this Giants team? Same thing with the Jets and the Broncos. You know, our best result yesterday was the Chiefs and the 49ers. That game closed 1, and that ended up being our biggest decision. So that went our way. It pretty much made the day really for us in the NFL overall was that one. But, I mean, most of the games weren't too big of a decisions. The betting was pretty even on. But, yeah, I mean, the 49ers definitely got bet a lot.
I don't know how you bet Jacksonville with the – Well, I don't know how you bet Jacksonville.
No, I agree.
I stayed away from Jacksonville because I thought they should win. I thought they should cover. But I thought the head coach would do exactly what he did in that game, which is turn down points and mismanage the game and get away from what he does because he's really an offensive coordinator. Remember, an offensive coordinator's job is to score points and gain yards. A head coach's job is to win the game. Take it from there, Patrick.
Yep, and Michael, you and I talked about Seattle being the most public side. They beat up on the Chargers 37-23. How'd that turn out for the book, Thomas?
We needed the Chargers to cover in that. I mean, that game closed 4.5 from an opener of 7, so the Seahawks were getting bet. And listen, I give Pete Carroll a lot of credit for what he's done. I mean, nobody thought anything of the Seahawks coming into this season. And let me just say, it was kind of around this time last year. If you remember last season, the Seahawks defense was basically a sieve in the beginning of the year. And then they kind of righted the ship, and the defense became a strength. And it kind of coincided with Russell Wilson taking a step backwards. Russell was hot at the beginning of last year, then he cooled off. And now here again, we're seeing kind of the defense improve a little bit now 2 weeks in a row.
Yeah.
Well, Geno was number 3 on your list there, Michael Lombardi. I mean,
I watched that tape
like
this morning, Patrick. I mean, that Charger defense, it's got pro bowlers on every level. They never stop anybody. And when you're a great defense, you should never give up long runs. And they constantly give up long runs. If you have a safety that's supposed to be the highest paid safety in football, one of the is to prevent big plays, and they can't do it.
Before we say goodbye, what are you laying? I didn't look. Are you laying like $1.70, $1.80 with the Astros? And what's the comeback on the Phillies in the World Series, Thomas?
$1.80 on the Astros. We definitely have some Astros liability. We just last week, I think it was Thursday, you could have gotten plus 110, I think. We took a $40,000 bet, moved to plus 105, and then somebody came in and put $110,000 down on the Astros to win the World Series. And so we have some liability now to them.
Mattress Matt.
Mattress
better
Mac.
Be on the lookout for him.
Yeah, it was
yeah.
Not Mattress Mac.
You read my mind, Michael. Thomas, have a good Monday. Thank you, buddy.
All right, thanks, guys.
Giants, Brady, and it is Geno Smith a legit MVP candidate? That's next.
You're listening to The Lombardi Line on VSiN, featuring former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now, once again, here's Patrick Maher.
Okay, Lombardi Line brought to you by BetMGM, the king of sportsbooks. You can single your first touchdown score prop tonight. Any Monday or Thursday night game, if your first touchdown score prop loses, you can receive up to $25 back in free bets. It's a great deal by BetMGM, essentially saying, here's a free play for you. Download the app or go to BetMGM.com. Remember, you got to be 21 years or older. 1-800-GAMBLER if you have an issue. It's a single first touchdown score prop tonight. If it loses, you receive up to $25 in free bets over at BetMGM. Got you back here, Lombardi Line, presented by BetMGM. Aforementioned, it is VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Just quickly, I want to give a shout out. It was a Lombardi sweep with Matt and Mick yesterday.
Yeah, we
had pretty good.
We had a great day. Yeah, it was a good day in the house. I mean, a shockingly good day, considering that the Panthers were able to. I mean, I don't know if you watched that game, Patrick. Obviously, I did with a ton of interest, but that game wasn't really as close as the score. I mean, the Panthers' defense, they held Brady to 3-for-12 on third down. They got off the field. They ran the football against the Bucs with Todd Bowles. Typically, you can't run the ball. And the Panthers did. Their offensive line played with continuity. And I'll say this. It's the first game of the year, where they actually got quarterbacking play out of their quarterback. P.J. Walker was sensational. He was really good. The touchdown throw to DJ Moore, the touchdown throw to Tremble were great throws. He had a drop on a big play, the first play of the game. But, I mean, they played complimentary football. They didn't try to extend themselves. Their defense got off the field on third down. And, you know, Todd Bowles in the fourth quarter, he put up the white flag. He surrendered.
I think the most, and I'm not just kissing Matt in the offensive side of the ball's ass, but I think getting that third string quarterback, PJ Walker, after one game under his belt to come back and play this way. Also, you mentioned Todd Bowles in his career. He just doesn't give up rush yards. How about the Panthers? They gave up their best piece in McCaffrey, and then they run for 173 yards against the Bucs and Todd Bowles, 6.9 yards per play. It really was an impressive look. You don't see this very often, Michael, where you've got a 13-point favorite losing outright 21-3. It was a Panthers domination there.
I mean, 2.1 points per possession, you know. They were able to, you know, they had 15 plays in the fourth quarter. They had five their first downs. They scored 7 points in the fourth quarter. They held Brady to 21 plays in the fourth quarter, five first downs, no points. Brady was 2-for-12 on third down, 1-for-3 on fourth down. You know, they did exactly what they had to do. They built the lead at halftime. They made big runs. They had a three-play drive, Patrick, a three-play drive of a 60-yard run and a 30-yard touchdown run by Hubbard. I mean, they did. And Brady could never get in gear. And like Rodgers, I think if you're Tampa and you're Jason Light, you're Todd Bowles, you're sitting here trying to figure out, like, Brady's great. He's one of the greatest players of all time. But all quarterbacks need a certain level around them. And Brady has no tight end. He has no slot receiver. And he has no nickelback. And they have no run game. And then it's another game where Brady's throwing it 50 times. And you can't do that and be successful against anybody. He only got sacked once, but, you know, that was hard. He had to move around. It was a challenge. I mean, and look, one of the reasons people were on the Panthers, even though the line went from 11 to 13.5, was because history showed us that the Bucs have dominated this series the last 2 years.
There was no reason to believe, after what we saw from PJ Walker in Los Angeles, that he would come back and perform this way. A couple things about Brady. This is the first time in 20 years he's 3-4 through 7 weeks. The offense, just 2-for-12 on third down for the Bucs, 322 total yards in the game. They had one score of the field goal and 11 possessions. I bring all that up because, look, we can have fun with Tom and, of course, the media and social media, which is the dregs of society, are going to kill him for his divorce and all that. But, look, there's a lot going on right now. Drops from the wide receivers. And guess what? It's quick, Michael. They turn around. They play in 3 days on Thursday night, and they're hosting Baltimore. Doesn't get any easier.
Yeah, it doesn't get any easier, and they have no run game. And if Baltimore, which ran the ball 44 times against the Browns, if you can't stop the run, here comes Baltimore. I mean, Lamar threw it 16 times. They only let him throw it 16 times.
They didn't even pretend. They just said, Cleveland, you can't stop the run. We're going to force this down your throat. That was Baltimore's game plan.
And fortunate that Cleveland was able to get that turnover in the fourth quarter, you know? And so, look, I mean, when you break this game down, think about this. The Carolina Panthers averaged 0.42 points per play, and the Bucs averaged 0.045. I mean, that's a lot of plays to get no results.
I'm just saying, and you and I will discuss this on Thursday, a point and a half, Baltimore laying it at Tampa feels short. That feels short.
Yeah, I mean, it does. But, you know, at some point, where does Tampa? I mean, the problem is there's no new players coming in. Like, what are we going to do? I've said this repeatedly. Brady wants to throw the ball in between the numbers. Look, I mean, I don't say this as a knock towards Brady. I say this as it's like quarterbacks are like shooters in basketball. There's a spot on the court that they want to shoot from. And if you don't get to that spot, they may not be effective. If you force them away from that spot, they become less effective. Whether it's Jordan, Bird, whomever it is, LeBron, same thing with quarterbacks. They want to throw the ball. I mean, Lamar wants to throw it in the middle of the field. Brady wants to throw it. And when you don't have middle of the field players, whose fault is it? Mahomes, he'll throw it anywhere. Josh Allen will throw it anywhere. Those are outliers.
Such a good analogy as far as even thinking of just playing hoops ourselves. Like, you get comfortable from a spot on the field. And you just think of Brady and his career zipping that ball in the seam where he doesn't have that security. He just doesn't have that, hey, we need to reset right now. We need a first down. We need to get some momentum going. He's throwing it outside. You saw the play with Evans where he bobbled the ball 20 times. Like,
perfect throw. But again, that's a post route. So that's a middle of the field throw. Brady doesn't love throwing the ball outside the numbers in nine routes. He don't love that, right? Like the throw that Denver makes against the Jets at the end of the game to Cortland Sutton on third. Like, why are you throwing that? Like, we're not going to get the first. That, like, that's a 50-50 ball. Brady doesn't want that. But the post, he can let the guy catch it with his feet. They can't make explosive plays. They had a 35-yard play, and they had two plays at 20 yards. That's it. That's all the Panthers gave up. No big plays. Keep the ball in front of us. They can't run it. And we get them to third down, we'll win the game.
Remember, this Bucs team plays the Seahawks November 13th. Where? Munich, Germany. Just as this is a reminder.
We have a game this weekend. We have the Denver and the Jags in London Town this weekend.
I love it.
For us.
When there's a game on while we're live, there's a little extra juice because you get Michael on the telestrator.
You know, they'll be juiced too because it's Red October here, Patrick.
What do you mean?
That's the everybody's got T-shirts around here selling them. Oh, Red October, it's Phillies.
So I didn't realize what you were saying when you said they were already greasing down the poles. Of course, the Phillies advanced to the World Series, and then as soon as the show ended, I saw on social they were literally brotherly love.
They were greasing down the poles.
They had the Crisco out, and they were greasing down the poles. It is a good time, though. I mean, they don't care about the 76ers, and Doc Rivers gets a free pass, but the Phillies and the Eagles
don't
are
get
certainly
me. Why do you agitate
stage?
Me? I mean, Doc has no accountability. It's not his fault. He's in charge of Toscano reservations and golf. That's what he's in charge of.
Toscano? That sounds delicious. Is it?
In Brentwood, right on the corner. I forget. It's a tremendous one of my favorite places to eat. He's in there every night. That's his spot. Him and Al Michaels, those two are staples at Toscano's.
Okay. Al Michaels, as I don't know if you heard, a huge fan of Taylor Swift. We don't have a ton of time to delve. Quickly, just to wrap up the Bucs, the turnaround. Do you agree with my assessment that 1.5 feels short? Do you think we close somewhere closer to 2.5 with the Ravens laying it at Tampa on Thursday, or you think the number comes back to the Bucs?
I think most people that played Tampa last week or played Green Bay last week were thinking there's a switch that you can turn on, me included. And that's a mistake. There's no switch you're going to turn on. Their execution isn't very good. I mean, their execution isn't very good. They had 48 rushes and completions. They had 17 incomplete passes in the game. Meanwhile, Carolina had 43 rushes and completions. They only had 6 incomplete passes. Six. That's all PJ Walker had was 6 incomplete passes. So, you know, they were able to make those plays. They didn't have penalty. They only had 3 penalties in the game. So I don't know if there's a switch that the Bucs can just switch on. Now, the Ravens have struggled at times to play run defense. We talked about it. They have been prone to give up big plays in the passing game. You know, we'll see what happens. They're going to have to do something personnel-wise to shake this because people are getting look, the Panthers are a good defense. I'm not saying they're not, but they stonewalled the Bucs yesterday.
I think you nailed it. I don't think it's the offense, which is bad right now for the Bucs, but the idea that you got run over on defense by PJ Walker in a McCaffrey-less Panther team, to me that says something systemic within the Bucs, right? It's just there's something wrong.
There's something going on. They're not, and Bowles alluded to it. He said, look, we're just not going to turn on this Super Bowl thing.
if it's Zappi or if it's Jones, does Michael adjust his handicapping tonight with the Patriots? We'll find out next.